Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's the Melrose Place podcast where we rewatch, recap, and analyze every single episode of the hit 90s TV series, Melrose Place.
I'm Jenny Hill.
And I'm Dan.
Let's get it started.
Season 2, episode 17?
18!
18. Arousing Suspicions, air date January 26, 1994. Much like this episode, me and Jenny have a new roommate.
Who's our roommate?
A chirping cricket downstairs.
Oh, that's right. We are coming to you from our bed.
Yeah.
We're sitting in bed right now during this podcast.
The biggest, like the super alien, super strength on steroids cricket has commandeered our Christmas tree and is chirping like a motherfucker from hell.
Dan is really bad at it.
I looked at Jay and was like, we can't record down here. We just can't.
He's not doing good.
This fucking cricket is taking over our house. I'm upset.
Well, it's going to be okay, Dan. We are here from the comfort of our bed, and we're going to bring you a recap of episode 18. So we kick it off. We are at Jane's apartment. Michael's in the kitchen, I think, whipping up breakfast.
But first, there's a brand new guitar riff on the interior of Melrose Place.
What?
The courtyard. It's a weird guitar riff.
Okay.
It's cool, though.
Cool.
I'm not going to do it for you.
Oh, man. We got a new guitar riff in the house. So it seems as though Michael is back on the scene at the hospital, and we find out he's a doctor now.
But he's not 100%. He's still in pain, but he's certain to like fight it out.
And he's walking with a cane. And of course, Jane is like, Michael, be careful. I don't think it's smart for you to be going to work.
So Jane is really trying to comfort Michael, make sure he's doing okay. And she offers to give him a ride to the hospital, but he doesn't want it. He wants to take the bus.
Well, and it's like, why? He's walking with a cane. He's not doing well. And Jane is like, are you sure you want to go to your first day of work like this? And he's like, yes, Jane, I'm not going to do anything to jeopardize my own recovery. I have a second chance at life, and I'm going to do it right this time.
Yeah, and then he pops a fucking Percocet or whatever he's taking. And Jane is looking hot in this scene. She's got the suspenders, this tight little short sleeve sweater. I'm really digging Jane's look.
Yeah, she looks good.
Looking real good.
I agree. So next up, we are at Joe's apartment where Reed is packing it up. And Joe says, well, Reed, you've been here a week, but I'm going to miss having you around.
I'm going to miss your balls on my counter.
Ugh!
He's packing up this weird, like, military-style duffel bag.
Maybe it's prison-issued.
Again, my pet peeve of tucked-in dress shirt, jeans, exposed belt loops, but no belt. You gotta have a belt if you're gonna have belt loops.
No, I think that's not the case.
That is the rule of Dan.
Okay. So Joe and Reed are getting kind of comfy. They're kissing, and then there's a knock at the door, and it's Amanda. It turns out Joe has been living at Melrose Place for one full year.
Full year.
And it's time to renew her lease. So Amanda has put into the lease a standard rent increase.
We get a lot. We have a lot of date reveals in this episode.
Yeah. We're really kind of seeing the timeline here.
And it's a wrinkle in time.
It is a wrinkle.
But, yo, most landlords, they just tape these sort of notices on your door or they mail them to you. Like, it's not something you want to handout in person. I feel like a lot of landlords could get punched in the face if when they deliver these types of...
Well, not Amanda. You know, she likes that personal service.
Yeah. And she's like, if you intend to live here more, I've added a standard rent increase.
Right. And she's like, you might want to leave because of the damage that Jake has put you through. And it's like, what, Amanda, aren't you like talking to Jake again?
Yeah. Aren't you like with him? I don't know. She sucks.
So Amanda goes downstairs. She's walking by the pool. She drops all these files. And at the same time, Reed comes down because I guess he's going back to the boat and sees this happen. So he comes over to help Amanda pick up all these files. And in doing so, he's like complimenting the crap out of her. Like, you're so beautiful. You're such a successful businesswoman. You drive such a great car.
Yeah, he's really barking up her tree. Trying to get her involved in this boat thing, which I don't understand, to be quite honest.
Well, he wants to open a charter service for the boat.
What is that?
So basically people would hire him to take the boat out so he could do it for special events. He could do it for, you know, people that want to just go out on the ocean, people that might want to sprinkle ashes of a loved one out in the open seas.
And he doesn't own the boat.
He doesn't, but he's managing it. So apparently some really rich bigwig dude owns it and he's just managing the day to day and keeping it up. So he is looking for investors.
But he's allowed to do this shit while the owner doesn't use it?
That's what he says, but I would presume that's probably a lie.
Right.
I mean, just knowing the little bit we know about Reed, he seems to be a shady character.
Yeah.
So he's trying to convince, I guess underhandedly, convince Amanda that she should be an investor.
It's like a get-rich-quick scheme.
Sorry,
go ahead. And her bloodline loves a shady deal.
Yeah, it is in her DNA.
Yeah.
He explains to her that he's going to open up a charter service and the investors can make up to 20%. And he's like, and I'm not even giving you the hard sales pitch. And Amanda's like, well, maybe you should give me the sales pitch.
Give me that hard sales pitch.
So they decide to meet up that evening on the boat itself at 6:30.
Yeah. Now we go to Billy's work at Escapades.
Yay! And of course, Celia is complaining. I feel like all she does is complain.
Yeah, she's not happy with her life.
And she's like, oh, God, my landlord is making me vacate my apartment. They're spraying for bugs or fumigating, and I don't have a place to live.
And then Billy, without consulting, one, his roommate, two, his girlfriend, whom he loves and lives with.
And who are the same people?
Who are the same people. He doesn't consult her and just says, why don't you move in with us?
So apparently...
Get in here.
Celia and Billy are assigned a story that they have to work on together. And she's like, well, it's not the stupidest idea I've ever heard. Which is like, yeah.
It's Billy, the stupidest one I've heard.
Billy usually has really stupid ideas. But she's like, yeah, we have to work together anyway. We wouldn't have to be staying late at the office. We could just be at your house and get this story done together.
And that is very dumb. Like, I mean, I work in an office. We work a lot, and when I have to work with people and they need a place to stay, like coincidentally, I'm not like, hey, you know what? Why don't you just move in? Then we can get our work done.
Dan, she's not moving in. She's just staying there for a few days while her apartment gets fumigated. So then Celia's like, well, I gotta go. And Billy's like, hey, where are you going? And she's like, I gotta get my stuff unless you want to share your underwear. She's always got like this little edge of like seductress.
I'm rooting for them. I want them to get together. I want them to get married. I want them to have a great time together. And I want Allison to be out on her ass.
Yeah.
Next day. What's the term? Yesterday's laundry.
What?
Is that what the term is?
I have no idea. Yesterday's garbage?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Or throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Okay, that does not apply to the situation.
Just throw her out. Throw her out with the baby.
Okay. So next scene, we're at Billy and Allison's apartment, and they're kind of canoodling together while Celia's getting comfortable in Billy's room. And Allison is speaking to Billy and saying that she's not convinced that this is such a good idea. She's just starting to like the idea that they're back together in the same apartment and things are good. And now they're going to have to kind of like watch their P's and Q's. And she says something so gross. She's like, well, it's like having kids. I guess we have to be quiet when we make love.
It's disgusting.
Oh, I just like barf, like vomit inducing.
Allison's wearing this for real, just like triple XL baggy ass shirt. It looks like a cross color shirt.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Do you remember cross colors?
Somewhat.
Yeah.
And Celia's, again, getting comfortable. She comes in with a big old bag of groceries, and she's like, I hope you don't mind. I'm bringing all my own food, so you better have enough space in your refrigerator. I eat only organic.
And then she says, these walls are pretty thin, so you guys aren't moaners, are you?
Ew! What a total bitch. It's like,
well, if you're here for 3 days, what if we are? What if we are? We're doing you a favor.
Yeah.
You're going to have to deal with our moaning.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's so out of line for her to say that.
You're not moaners, are you?
Ugh.
I'm saying that if I'm in someone's house for like 30 seconds. Like, I'm in here right now. So if you're a moaner, you better knock it off.
Oh, God. So the next scene, we're back to Jane's apartment and Michael's making dinner. He's really becoming like a chef extraordinaire.
Yeah, he's cooking, he's cleaning, he's always up on his feet.
And Jane comes home and he's like, welcome to restaurant Mancini. And Jane is like, oh my gosh, okay, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm making all of your favorite food. And Jane is really surprised because, of course, you know, this is his first day back at the office.
She thought he'd be very tired and sort of overspent.
And Michael is like, look, Jane, you are the most important person in my life. A month ago, I didn't think I would survive, and you opened your heart and your home to me. You have been my inspiration, and I'm going to do everything I can to win back your trust, so maybe someday you'll be able to forgive me. And then Jane says, I already am forgiving you, Michael. It's just going to take a little time. And then they kiss.
Yeah.
Ah!
The smoochie-doochie.
Oh, my God. Why, Jane? Why?
I thought she forgave him, like, in the hospital. Remember, he was like, I need your forgiveness, yeah. Jane. Jane, please,
I don't think he had his jaw wired shut.
Well, that's how he talked, with the scab across his face. Remember that big-ass scab?
I remember.
Jane, please forgive me.
And okay, yeah, but I think he's meaning like he wants to win her back and really like get back to that romantic place that they were in before. So okay, this is setting the stage that like they are getting back together basically.
Yeah.
Ugh.
On a rapid phase. What do you think is healing quicker, Michael's legs or his relationship with Jane? Yeah.
Absolutely. It's
going very fast.
And here's another little timestamp. He says he references that he's only been there for a month, which is like, I call bullshit on that because didn't he go in before Thanksgiving? And this is after Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah, that is way longer than a month.
Yeah.
Come on, writers. You got to have the continuity, you got to have it right.
So next up, we are on the boat with Reed, and Amanda is aboard, and he is trying to convince her to invest.
And then he starts trying to convince her to, like, do it.
Yeah, he gets a little touchy, a little feely.
She's like, whoa, are you coming on strong? And he's like, what if I am, bitch? You want some of this?
I don't think he said that.
Oh, he didn't.
And okay, is it just me, or does Amanda have, like, JBF hair all the time?
Just been fucked.
Like, look at her hair.
Yeah, her hair is very, like, frail and
it's,
brittle.
No, it's very, like, it seriously looks just like JBF all the time. It's really big. It's really messy. It's like strands are coming out all over the place.
She doesn't have a lot of time. Have you seen the grounds at Melrose Place?
Yeah, they look like shit.
She doesn't have time for anything.
So she's like kind of going off about her, all of her knowledge about boats and asking about, oh, how many nautical miles does this go? Blah, 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 blah. And he's like, oh, wow, I'm impressed. You know your stuff.
Like the nautical miles fucking matter at all to the story?
Well, no, I think it's just establishing that, like, she knows what she's talking about. She's like, yeah, actually, boats were a passion of mine. My father used to have a yacht that was docked here in this very marina. Yeah,
I was raised on yachts.
And then he goes, are you afraid of me? Do you think that this whole thing is just a play to get you out here? And she's like, no, I'm not afraid of you, and I don't think that that's what it's about. And he's like, well, maybe you should be. And that's when he like comes on to her and
he's so slimy.
Yeah. And then he's like, well, what do you think, lady sailor? You want to take this baby out for a ride? And at that very moment, Joe, like,
hey, guys,
Joe,
hey, over here.
Up. Okay. So
it's me, guys. Joe,
Amanda and Reed are both have their backs turned to her. And Reed is like, okay, I'm starting the engine. She's and like,
hey, guys, yo. Toodle.
Yeah.
Yoo-hoo.
And Joe's just like, Reed, Reed. And he's like, hey. And he yells as hot and loud as he can. Hey, Amanda, come up here and ride with me.
Yeah. It's like, sail with me. What would she have done otherwise? If Reed didn't say that, not sail with
like,
you?
Been on a different deck? I don't know. But then, of course, Joe is like, what? Amanda's on the boat with my boyfriend and they're sailing away?
Yeah, Joe's like, God damn it.
Yeah, so she's not happy.
Now, we're back in Billy and Allison and Celia's place. And Allison looks like shit. Like, just garbage.
Poor Allison.
She's got.
She used to be one of the more attractive characters, and really,
you know what I think happened? I think that her. I think that her costumes got were on the rack, and they all caught on fire. And then this episode, they're
Dan.
Like, "Well, we cast this 400-pound person, and so all we have is a triple XL sweatshirt and this." Triple XL cross color shirt.
How do you explain her haircut and the styling of her hair?
I think she fell into a weed whacker.
I mean, it's so bad.
Yeah.
Season two has not been kind to Allison.
No. She's in this 3X light blue sweatshirt, and she's like about to go take a shower, I guess, if it even matters. And Celia rolls out. She's like, oh, hey, I got to jump in here quick. Don't worry. I'll be right out.
She's like, hey, do you mind if I jump in the shower? Okay, thanks. I'm going to.
Yeah. So she just slams the door. Allison's like, great. This isn't working.
Yeah. So she's really upset. She goes over to Billy. And then she sees this empty carafe. And she's like, ah, and what? You drank my orange juice? And Billy was like, yeah, I told Celia she could have it. I mean, we've been up all night working on the story, and that was the only thing that would keep her going. So Allison is into
drinking OJ at night.
It's and then Allison is like, I was up all last night and squeezed that for 20 minutes.
What? This is like a this is a non thing to be mad about.
This is so stupid.
And like it's all a wreck and Billy's like really excited. He's like, yeah, we got all our work done. Thanks for that orange juice. Really kept us going.
So next scene, we're out in the courtyard of Melrose Place and Joe walks up to Amanda and hands her over a package and says, one lease signed, sealed, and delivered. And she's like, okay, Amanda, I have to just ask you to please stay out of my life. And Amanda's taken aback by this comment. Well, Joe, I thought we had a truce about Jake. And Joe is like, look, this is not about Jake. I saw you on Reed's boat last night, and you have a tendency of going after other women's boyfriends. And I am not playing this game with you. You have a good job. You have money. You have looks that some men find appealing. And guess what? He does not like you. He only wants to talk to you for your money.
Kudos to Joe for always telling the truth.
Yeah.
She always gives it to people just straight up. She'll be like, look, I don't like you. Get away.
Yeah, you always know where you stand with her.
You're not my friend. I'm going to paint this room black. Like, she doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, she does what she does.
Yeah, and she wears that horrible, horrible vest in this scene. It's like one of those suits that you buy as like a joke. You know what I mean? Like the Christmas suits that are out.
Yeah.
That you just buy. Like, they're not like fitted suits. They're just like size small, medium, or XL. And it's like a fake like joke suit. And her vest is like Polaroids. It's just a collage of Polaroids. It's very strange. I don't know who would. I don't know what she's trying to accomplish with that.
So she saunters away, and then Jake overhears this exchange, and he comes down and he asks, What's that all about? I mean, what's going on with Joe? And Amanda catches him up to speed, and he's like, wait a minute. You went on this boat with an ex-con? What are you thinking?
And she's like, yeah, Jake, don't worry about it. I'm super hungry. Take me inside and let's have breakfast.
So she tells Jake that she's not interested at all in Reed or his boat or his little business offer. And that quite frankly, he gives her the creeps.
Yeah. And she doesn't want anything to do with this boat.
Next up, Matt is going to lunch at this restaurant and he's looking for a place to sit. And it looks like another guy was about to snag the table. So Matt and the stranger kind of have this cute little exchange where he's like, hey, I had dibs on the table. Well, what, do you want to share it with me?
And should we flip a coin?
Yeah. So they have this like cutie little like flirtatious little convo and they decide that they'll eat lunch together. And so Matt starts learning a little bit more about this stranger, that he has a day off of work and that he lives in Long Beach and he came all the way out here because this is his favorite restaurant.
And this stranger is Jeffrey Lindley, played by Jason Beghe. I don't know. B-E-G-H-E. Beghe. Beige. He is known for his work on Californication and basically every TV show with the name Chicago in it. So Chicago Med, Chicago Justice, Chicago Fire, and Chicago PD.
And you know what? I've never seen any of those Chicago shows, but I have seen commercials for them, and that's where I remember his face from.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I know him straight from Californication. I remember I was on that big kick, and I watched like all of it.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah.
So we learn that he's seems to be interested in Matt and he doesn't want to talk about himself. He's like, when I'm not at work, I don't like talking about what I do. Tell me what you do. So Matt, you know, launches into conversation about his work at the hospital.
Yeah. And basically Matt says, we finally understand what Matt does. Remember, we didn't know what he did.
Well,
he says, well, I work for on behalf of indigent cases. So he's fighting for the little guy.
Yeah, I think we kind of had an inkling of that.
Well, but then he shows up at Michael's rehab. He knows everything about Michael's rehab. And he has access to DUI records.
I think he was just being a friend.
He has access to blood documents on the hospital. So it's very, like, we weren't really sure what Matt's role there was. But now we know.
Now we know for sure.
It's indigent cases.
So speaking of the hospital, we're back. And Michael is there. I guess this is his second day of work. And of course, second day on the job, he has a personal visitor. None other than Sydney Andrews.
Here's how this goes. Sydney walks up, says, hi. Michael says, oh, God. What do you want?
I love Michael's reaction to Sydney.
God.
It's so funny. Every time he sees her, he's always like, get away from me. Ugh, Sid, I hate you.
Don't like, touch me.
Every time. And Sydney's like, Michael, I came here because my court date's tomorrow. I need your support. You have to be there.
He's like, I don't have to be anywhere, all right? This is a wrap. You helped me. I helped you. That's it. We don't know each other's shit anymore. And she's basically like, Michael, you cannot ignore me.
I thought we had an understanding. I'm going to tell Jane. I'll tell Jane everything.
You can't shut me out. And then he walks away and he's like, I just did.
You gotta love Michael Mancini.
And she threatens to tell Jane everything.
Right.
And he threatens back, you do it, and I'll tell him you jump from prostitute to headmistress.
To pimp.
Yeah.
That you've graduated.
Graduated to pimp. Like, what would he say? Just stand up in court and be like, excuse me, she's a pimp now?
Yeah, and then he would have to implicate himself to be like, I bought a hooker.
You know how I know this? I bought a hooker. Made him sleep with my ex-wife.
Trap my ex-wife's boyfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It does not make sense, but whatever. We see that Sydney is still trying to get into Michael's life, and Michael is not having it.
And later on, we realized that's why Sydney was like, I don't give a fuck. That plan sounds terrible, Michael.
So we're back at the restaurant with Matt and Jeffrey. And Matt says, I've been talking for an hour. I mean, come on. Tell me a little bit about yourself. What do you do?
And he is so secretive. My note here was like, he's probably just not out yet, you know, and he doesn't want anybody to know. And he just met Matt. So it's like, meh. Whatever.
I don't give away all the personal details. However, he does, instead of saying, you know, Matt suggests, why don't we have lunch again or, you know, meet up another time? And he goes, well, how about you come to my house for dinner? Which is very personal.
Yeah. First date, enter my home.
Yeah. I don't know.
And how about bowling?
I mean, yeah, exactly. Like anybody who's like, okay, you just met them that day by chance. It wasn't like you were set up by anybody. And then the next move is come to my house. I don't know. That's moving a little fast. But Matt is into it. He's like, that's great. He gives Jeffrey his number and he's like, oh, can I take down your number too? And Jeffrey's like,
I don't have a phone.
I just moved to Long Beach, so I don't have a phone yet, and I really can't take calls at work, so let me just get in touch with you.
That should be... Remember I said the last episode, every now and then, weird people do something...
do weird stuff.
Weird shit before they do something even bigger that's strange. This is it. This is your flag. Oh, you don't have a phone? Oh, it's not set up? Okay. Bye.
Well, no, I think beyond that too, just the fact that you wouldn't even like say what you did for a living.
Yeah.
Because my brain, I'm like, he's an exotic dancer. Like that's what I'm thinking when I hear that.
Lunch was great. You're a serial killer. And ta-ta.
Okay, so we are back with Joe and she goes to Reed's boat and he's like laying on the ground trying to like fix some plumbing in the sink in the kitchen. And Joe, like, I did not understand this blocking. I did not get like this whole purpose of this scene. Joe walks in and is like, oh, hi, you're fixing the sink, and sees Reed and then just turns around and tries to walk out. Did I miss something here?
I don't know. I guess it was like an internal battle. And she was like, okay, I'm going to go talk to him, and then saw him and was like, oh, I got to go.
It was very weird to me. And then she confronts Reed about having Amanda on the boat. And he was like, look, I didn't think that you would mind that much. It was purely business. I saw an opportunity and I went for it. And she's like, look, I really dislike Amanda. I mean, not even dislike, I despise her. And of all the people you could ask for money, you go to her. Why wouldn't you come to me?
And he was like, because you were complaining that your rent's going to go up $30.
And then she's like, look, I like, it's not about that. Okay. It's not about the money. It's just because I don't like Amanda. And then Reed fires back with, I found that love and business cannot coexist. I'm not going to get a loan from you because I'm not trying to like mix that.
And he said, haven't you learned anything from your stint with Jake and those bikes? You want me to break your fridge too? You want me to throw a bottle of wine at your wall? I'll do it.
And really, Joe is so quick to be like, here, have all my money. And it's like, you've really been like seriously talking to this guy for 1 week and you're ready to be like, yes, come to me. I'll invest in your idea.
And he already pointed a gun at her.
It's like, sometimes you got to wonder, Joe does not make the best personal decisions.
Well, she's a cool aunt. That's it.
She is. You know, she's got to make a couple mistakes.
So Joe leaves. Reed is sad. He's like, don't go, Joe. Don't go. She's basically just like, yeah, fuck it. I'm out. Now, Allison comes home to her apartment and nobody is there. But she sees a written out story called Homeless in Malibu with a post-it note on it that says, hey, we're at Shooters, but read this. Let us know what you think.
And did you notice there was a carafe of orange juice?
Oh, and full.
So they paid her back with the orange juice. I would really like to read that manuscript. Homeless in Malibu.
Maybe we'll go back and pause it and we'll try to see if we can read a little bit of it.
Can you try it? Homeless in Malibu by Billy Campbell and Celia. In the blazing chaparral on a mountain ridge high above Topanga Canyon, Scott Nafong took a moment to question his sanity. There was fire over us, fire below us, fire all around us, the El Segundo firefighter said, shaking his head at the memory. Soot clung to his brown hair and left a gray film on his hands and neck. The fire was everywhere. We had nowhere to escape to. As the sun come up, many people were wondering what had happened to these brave men. They had saved 72 homes over a period of 3 weeks. It turned out they were safe in Sherman Oaks Burn Center. The remaining question was, what about the people whose homes had not been saved? Many people were leaving for friends and relatives, but some had nowhere to go. Sure, there was fire insurance, but that couldn't get everything back. No one could stop it. It was just way too big. And let me say, the two that was used there was the wrong two. It's T-O, not T-O-O.
Really?
So here's a writing sample of Celia and Billy.
They're trash.
It's pretty terrible.
Pretty bad.
There's a knock on Jane's door and it's Sydney. She needs to talk to Jane. Sydney is imploring Jane to turn Michael away because he's lying to her.
Oh, yeah. She just starts singing. Singing like a little narc.
Jane, he wants you back. He does this whole thing about starting a new life routine. It's all a lie. I have to talk to you, Jane. Please let me come in. So she comes in and she leads with, Jane, remember all that money I used to have? I wasn't a model. And she comes clean. She says straight up, Jane, I was a prostitute.
And she's like, you think I'd lie about being a hooker? I got a court date to prove it.
Because, of course, Jane hears this and she's like, stop it. If this is some lovesick little lie, it's insane. You need to stop lying. And Sydney gets all upset and she's crying and she basically tells Jane everything.
Just singing. Singing like a bird caught in jail.
And she says, I don't know what to do, Jane. He just keeps pulling me back. And Jane is furious and she's like, I know, Sydney, he does the same thing to me. I should have protected you, Sydney. You're my sister.
And I'm really sad that she went ahead and told Jane because, like I was saying in previous episodes, I liked Jane. I liked Sydney and Michael together, like working for evil and like being together in like cahoots.
Well, I think that's the beauty of this because it's so flip-floppy.
Yeah.
You never know who's loyal to who.
Yeah. Well, Michael is surely fucked in this situation. Because Jane is like, I'm sorry, I forgot you were my sister.
Yeah, so they're really patching things up.
Yeah.
Next, we go over to Amanda and Jake in bed, and they are just in the sheets.
She's like kissing on his like chest and neck, and it's just really yucky.
Well, it's in the morning, so they're waking up, and Jake is just kind of sitting up in bed. Amanda wakes up, and she's like, "Oh, Jake, how long have you been awake? What's going on?"
And Jake's just, "I've been up a few hours." Just sitting there.
And he's like, "I'm just worried about that Reed creep." And she's like, "Oh, Jake, I told you I'm not buying into his little plan." And then Jake is like, "I'm not worried about you. I'm worried about Joe.
What the fuck's wrong with you?" And I thought she was going to kiss his nipple. I kept waiting for it. There wasn't a lot of dong watch in this one. Not a lot of privates.
You were really on the watch.
Yeah, I needed to, like, is she going to do it? She kissed around it.
Yeah.
But no, just actual nip.
So, of course, Amanda's not too pleased to hear that he's not concerned about her own well-being and safety, but that he's still thinking about Joe in that way. And he's and she says, "Well, I'm going to speak for myself and Joe that whatever she's doing isn't any business of yours." And she gets up and storms out of the bedroom.
And then there's an exterior shot of Melrose Place, and it is so dirty. All of the traffic areas, by traffic areas, I mean like places where people walk on a daily basis, are covered.
It's like caked in mud.
Yeah, it's covered in dirt.
And then the plants look really sickly.
Just fucked.
I think this is something that it's an ongoing theme. I don't know if it's something that they're doing consciously to say like, this place is getting a little run down since Amanda Woodward is running the show.
And no one swims in the pool anymore.
Nobody.
They used to have barbecues out there. They used to be where you chill.
Yeah, the pool was like the epicenter. Everyone was like, "Yeah, let's chill at the pool."
Yeah.
Granted, it is January.
Still though, it's LA, it's Southern California.
Yeah, no one's chilling in the pool anymore. And this is like, again, the next morning. So Sydney is exiting Jane's apartment. And
this is where Jane says, "I'm sorry, I forgot we were sisters."
Yeah, and this is implied that they've been up all night talking about Michael, hashing out everything. And of course, this coincides with Michael's arrival back to the apartment from, I guess he worked an overnight shift at the hospital.
And he knows he is just totally fucked because he's walking past Sid and he's like, "Hi, Sid."
And she's just like, "Ha ha, I got you, sucker."
He says, "How are you?" And she's like, "I'm fine. You're screwed." And he's like, "Motherfucker."
And so even before he can enter the apartment, Jane comes out with his suitcase and is like, "Okay, Michael, you're done."
One suitcase. And so Jane is throwing Michael out. And Michael, he blocks the door with his cane, and Jane just grabs the cane and throws it in the pool.
Yeah.
And Michael's just standing there like, "How am I supposed to move?"
Yeah, and she's just like, "I'm so disappointed. I really thought that you had changed." And he's like, "Well, you're going to believe your whore sister.
Your two-bit whore sister."
And she's like, "Yeah, I actually do. I believe every word she said." So he's out on his ass again.
He's screwed. Now we go to Allison and Billy's, and Allison and Celia are sort of like having a moment about Billy's talents.
Yeah.
And how he's so talented.
And I guess, okay, so Allison did make some edits to their story. I hope she caught that 2-2 thing where, you know, they use the correct 2. And she said, "You know, all in all, it was a great story. You guys really do write well together." And Celia's like, "Yeah, I hate to admit it, but Billy is pretty talented."
Yeah, it's hard to admit Billy is anything other than horrible.
I don't know. I think Billy is getting kind of cooler.
It was the only thing that was cool that he's ever done is pay the check with Amanda and be like, "See ya."
Okay.
So Michael comes back. He goes to the only place he can, And I'm not sure why he can.
And it's kind of like, I'm not sure why he didn't go there sooner. It's this gorgeous beach house.
Yeah, it's been a month.
Or, okay, we know it's been longer than a month, but they're trying to play it off that it's only been a month.
Yeah, so he, and his suitcase is on rollers.
He's ahead of the curve.
He has a rolly suitcase, but he rolls up to Kimberly's old beach house, and he is not on the lease, because remember, Kimberly was like, I'll take that lease, and since you're paying half your earnings to Jane.
Do we know if he's still paying rent?
He's definitely not. He can't afford it. And then and Kimberly's dead. So right when she would die, unless the parents are paying her rent now, she was renting. She didn't own.
Yeah.
So how is this place still on the market?
Maybe she paid up front. Like, maybe she prepaid for a year.
I guess that's something. I don't know, but wouldn't you as a landlord still like check up on the house? Like,
no.
Oh, I read the paper, and that's my tenant who got in a vicious car crash.
No. If it's paid, who cares?
Yeah, I guess. So he comes back. He just waltzes in. And, yeah, I wrote, how is that place still available?
And, you know, the plants are dead. That was good on the part, like, to just show, like, no one's been caring for the place. No one's been there. Mm-hmm. There's photos of him and Kimberly everywhere. And Michael's just, like, opening his bottle, probably Percocets, and just popping.
He just starts popping some candies.
Yeah.
Now, Jake goes to the marina to confront Reed.
Now, Reed is giving this couple a tour of the boat, and it seems as though he's trying to sell them on having their wedding reception on the boat. That sounds like a terrible idea.
Horrible idea.
So
horrible.
These two are really liking the idea. They can only have 20 people to their wedding, but this sounds good to them. And so Jake comes up, and he's like, so, some operation you got here, Reed. And my question is, I don't think Jake and Reed ever formally met. And yes, while Joe has told Reed about Jake, how would he even like know what he looks like? I mean, there,
you could just say, oh, the guy upstairs dates Amanda.
And there could have been scenes or could have been things that we're not privied to as the audience. Yeah,
they've laid in bed for a lot. Long time.
And, of course, Reed is offended by Jake calling this an operation. And he's like, Jake, it's a real business. And I'm here trying to sell it, like, sell this boat to these two to have their wedding reception.
And Reed's like, so what's going on? Your unemployment ran out and you're looking for a job? And Jake's basically like, haha, real funny asshole.
Yeah, just came to see what's going on. Bye. See you later. So Jake's kind of on to Reed, and I think Reed is getting hip to the jive.
Hip to the jive?
Yeah.
What's that mean?
Like he's catching on.
Hip to the jive. So we are at Escapade Magazines, and apparently junior editor's on the table.
Yeah, and okay, do you remember their boss's name? I always forget her name.
Lucy, too.
Yeah, it's not Lucy.
Marcy.
Yeah, it's the...
Nancy.
Maybe it's Nancy.
Might be Nancy.
I think it is Nancy. So it seems that Celia and Billy did a really good job on this story that they just worked on. And the guys upstairs are taking notice. And they've got a junior editor position open. And they need to fill it immediately. And they've decided that it's going to be either Celia or Billy.
So they're both assigned two separate stories to edit the crap out of, and they need to be ready by tomorrow.
And so they both jump at this chance. They're very excited, and they start working right away.
Back to Melrose Place. Sydney, knock, knock, knock on Jane's door, door, door.
Jane is sketching some designs, and Sydney shows up with a bowl full of popcorn, and she's like,
and a video.
I'm hoping we can maybe share a movie, Jane. I mean, I'm thinking, what did they want to watch together?
Parent Trap.
Oh, yeah. The Parent Trap.
And Jane starts like laughing. She's like, Oh, Sid, we haven't watched that in a long time when we were kids on my bed.
And then Sydney chimes in like, yeah, the weekend we both had the mumps.
What the fuck?
Is this like 1894?
Yeah. Remember when we all had scarlet fever? And we got rubella? Here, let me just look up the mumps.
Yeah, like what? Let's hear what the symptoms are.
Okay, guys. Check this out. Here's what Jane and Sydney had together.
And they were in bed watching Parent Trap.
Watching Parent Trap. The mumps is a viral infection that affects the salivary glands that are easily preventable by vaccine. It's treatable by medicine. Mumps is a contagious disease caused by a virus. It typically starts with a few days of fever, headache, muscle aches, tiredness, and loss of appetite, followed by swollen salivary glands. You can protect yourself and your family against mumps with vaccination. So it looks like Mr. and Mrs. Andrews were anti-vaxxers.
And why do they call it the mumps? Because you have like little bumps or something on your salivary glands?
I guess so.
Do they get swollen or something?
In most children, mumps is pretty mild, but it can cause serious lasting problems, including meningitis, swelling of the tissue covering the brain and spinal cord.
Oh, that's bad.
Deafness, temporary or permanent. Can you still get mumps?
Maybe that is what Sydney's problem is. She had a little bit of swelling on that brain tissue.
I think she has this is long-term effects of mumps.
Yeah.
Guys, get vaccinated. I remember when I was a kid, I got a vaccination for measles, mumps, and rubella.
Yeah.
You got to get those vax. Those
got to get those vax. So Sydney does weasel her way into Jane's heart. She's like, go get my comforter off the bed for old time's sake.
Yeah, and cough in my face for old time's sake, too.
And there,
let's get the flu together.
And there is a phone call. She picks it up, and Michael is on the other end, and he's kind of like incoherent, just babbling like, hey, babe, let's talk to you, babe. I haven't been drinking, babe. And she's like, Michael, why are you calling me? You sound drunk. And he's like,
I need you in my life.
And she's like, stop trying to lay this guilt trip on me. Go away. And he's like, I love you. I need it to be you. It's always been you. And she hangs up.
She says, make it someone else.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. She does. And she hangs up. But then we see that Sydney is in her bedroom going to get the comforter for old time's sake. And it appears Sydney had picked up the receiver as well so she could listen in on this phone call. Mm-hmm.
And she's like, yes, this went great.
Yeah, of course. So her little plan is panning out very nicely.
Now, next scene, what is Reed doing? Is he planning a bomb?
Okay, at first I thought he was building a safe, but then he like put it in the floorboard of the boat. And then I was like, is he making like a murder room? Like, is that a place where he would like hide somebody?
Maybe, but like he was testing, I guess, the locking mechanism on it.
It seemed like it was a safe, but because it's going into the floor, it makes me feel like he's going to keep slaves down there.
I wouldn't put it past him. But so Joe shows up on the boat with a picnic basket, and she is basically professing to Reed like, hey, you know, I didn't want this, but I kind of do.
Yeah, she's like, I know you're busy, but I hope you have time for an apology. I've just had a lot of bad luck in the love department. My judgments have been really rotten lately, and I just kind of had that feeling about it and about like seeing you and Amanda on the boat, and I shouldn't have jumped to conclusions. And I'm just kind of like, Joe, what are you doing?
Get far away from this man.
Yeah, you are getting these red flags and you're getting these feelings for a reason. He is a psycho.
He's crazy.
And why is she all about him? Like, it's really creepy that he's like, I met you at a reunion and I'm going to move to LA now.
Here's my crusty boxers.
It's just weird.
So we're at dinner with Matt and Jeffrey in a very nice apartment. Jeffrey, they're grilling. Jeffrey's meat looks disgusting.
Well, here's the thing, too. They walk in from like a patio area, and as they're walking in, you see the grill in the background, and there's like a 2-foot flame shooting out. Like, it looks like a blowtorch. And they're like, okay, well, we're done with the meat. Let's just leave the grill on fire.
Guys, remember to put out your fires when you're done cooking.
And so they go into the apartment. They're about to like sit down and have dinner. And Matt notices that there's a phone on the wall. And he's like, oh, you got your phones put in. And Jeffrey's like, oh, well, my phone's here, but it's just not hooked up. You know, the phone company, they only work 8 to 5. That just coincides with my work schedule. So they're going to sit down for dinner. And then the phone rings.
And Matt's like, looks like your phone's work, dude. What's up?
And Matt's like, look, I'm going to go. And then Jeffrey's like, no. I guess they turned it on while I was at work. And Matt just gets right to the chase. He's like, Jeffrey, we're playing games here. I'm not about to play games with you. Are you seeing somebody else? And then Jeffrey's like, it's not someone else. It's something else. Come here. Very follow weird. Me. And so he takes him into the bedroom. And I'm thinking, like, my brain is going like a million miles a minute. Like, holy shit. Like, what does he have in his room? What? Like, he says it's something else.
It's a body.
Does he have like a sex doll that he's like keeps in his closet? And it's like,
check out all these my buddies I've been fucking.
I mean, I don't know. But no, it isn't as salacious as that. He brings out a freaking naval uniform and he's like, see, I'm in the Navy and I come from a family that's groomed me to be a lieutenant in the Navy since I've been 6 years old. And Matt's like, yeah, don't they have don't ask, don't tell? Like, how does this relate to your personal life?
He says, well, with my dad, it's don't do it. Don't do it.
So basically, he's telling Matt that he's not out to his family and that he's kind of got to be on the DL with dating guys. And I know that for Matt, this is something that's got to be really difficult for him because he is out and that's been a really hard road for him with him and his family. And he's finally gotten acceptance from his dad.
Does he live with his dad? Because if he doesn't, then why is he concerned about the phone ringing?
I have no idea.
Like, Jeffrey, you seem to be like over 30, like, right?
No, he looks like he could be close to 40.
Yeah, you're in the Navy. You got a good job. If Matt here gives you a little ring-a-ding, like, how does that mean you're gay?
And, okay, he is allowed to come. Matt can come to your house, but he just can't call your house?
Yeah, what?
It's just very weird.
There's no registry on phone bills that's like, call from Matt Fielding, gay.
It's just so weird.
And if a gay man did call you, what the fuck?
Like, I don't get this reasoning either. But
sorry, Matt. No phones. No gay guys can call.
But Matt's kind of like, oh, I get it now.
Can't have gay guys calling the house.
Yeah.
I just can't. You come over, though, and I'll grill for you outside.
It's just really weird. And if I were Matt, I'd be like, you know, it seems like you have to work out a lot in your personal life. Yeah, so
seems like your dad. Seems like your dad has your phone tapped.
It's just really weird. Okay, so we're now back with Reed and Joe. They're sleeping on the boat, and then there's a noise that's kind of happening out on the boat. So Reed wakes up. He's like really on edge. He's like, okay, there's like an intruder on the boat. I'm going to get him. Joe's still sleeping. He like tiptoes around the bed. Underneath the bed, he pulls out this big ass shotgun. And he's like,
ready to blow some shit up.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I'm going to get this person. So he's like, you know, tiptoeing up the stairs. He's in his old crusty boxers. He's walking around shirtless. He's outside and he's like ready to pounce, only to find that the culprit making all of this noise is a little cat.
Meow.
Dan, are you falling? Like, I feel like you're like sleeping right now.
I'm dying.
Okay, so it's just a cat, and I don't know what this scene is supposed to accomplish. Maybe that just...
It's to establish that Reed has a shotgun, and he has reason to suspect someone on this boat ready to...
And he's, like, ready to kill them.
Yeah. That's all it was.
Yeah. So, next up, we're at court. And Sydney is there, and I guess the court is deciding whether or not they're going to press charges against Sydney for solicitation.
And Sydney, she basically stands up to say her piece for the judge, but it's not what Sydney says per se. It's more what we see behind Sydney.
No, okay, behind Jane.
Dan? So there's a shot of Sid standing up. And then... Behind Sid is Jane. And then there's a little pocket that you can see another person in the audience. And it's focused right on their white head and then a jean jacket and then a patch of a Confederate flag. And I was like, Jenny, what the fuck is that shit?
Like there's a lid, like there's a skinhead sitting behind Jane.
Yeah.
With a full-on Confederate flag.
Very weird.
Yeah. So Dan was very taken aback by just that visual.
And he was very interested in Sydney's testimony.
Yeah, he is like all ears. And again, Sydney is just singing like a canary.
Fucking she's just rat.
Like laying it all out. Like, well, I was working at a restaurant and then my friend Ellen told me about this girl named Lauren. You've probably seen her in the papers.
She tried to get me hooked on cocaine too.
Yeah, like she's just like every little detail to throw everybody under the bus. She
gave me a
care.
Beeper.
And I guess this is supposed to tell us that Lauren has been found out and she's being indicted. And now Sydney's going to like go down with the ship. So Sydney's just like telling them exactly what happened. And Sydney's like, I only did it twice before and I was trying to get out of it. And then this guy came to my work and he propositioned me and I told him no, but he was really persistent. And then I got afraid that if I said no, that Lauren would come after me. And then the judge is like, well, it seems like there isn't a lot to go on here. And honestly, it sounds like entrapment. And that's exactly what I said during that episode.
You did say that.
Because when the police provide conditions to have you break the law and you do it, and like, and otherwise you wouldn't have done it, because at that point Sydney was like out of the game. If anybody else would have gone to her, she would have said no, and she wasn't actively seeking out Johns any longer.
Yeah.
So basically, she gets the whole case thrown out and they decide to dismiss all the charges against her.
Judge throws it out. Jane and Skinhead Guy are super stoked about it. And they go on their merry way. No harm, no foul.
And the judge is like, but just to tell you, Sydney, I don't want to see you in my court again. I don't give second chances.
She's like, don't worry, mister. You won't see me again.
Which I'm like, probably two episodes we'll see you again.
I promise. I am done hooking for sure.
Okay, so we're at Escapade magazine and it's the moment of truth. Nancy's going to deliver the news. Who got the promotion?
Drum roll.
It turns out they're going to give the job of junior editor to Billy.
What?
So Billy is stoked. He's all excited. Like, yay. And even Celia's like, well, I got to hand it to you, Campbell. Good job. And then Nancy says, well, the only thing is the position's at our sister property in New York. That's not going to be a problem. Is it, Billy?
And then Billy's just like, what? No. No problem.
And, like,
happy.
Isn't that something that you would lead with when, hi, we have a promotion and it's on the other side of the country?
Yeah, you can't just get tricked into
like it was really
into promotions.
Yeah, and then I think he says at the end, he goes, what am I going to tell Allison?
Hey, you want this awesome internet tech job at a startup?
Yeah, that sounds great.
It's in Somalia. See ya.
Oh, what am I going to tell Allison?
It's weird.
Yeah, so that's the end of the episode.
Yeah, that's how we end it, on a big old cliffhanger.
So, to recap, Celia and Billy make a great writing team.
Michael gets a cane.
Billy gets promoted and has to move to New York City.
Matt goes on another date.
Sydney comes clean to Jane about everything.
Jane kicks out Michael.
Reed is trying to get investors for his little boat business. And we leave it where Michael is possibly ODing on pills right now.
Yeah, Michael's not in
like
a good
he could
place.
Be dying right now.
Yeah, poor guy. Well, not so poor guy.
Not so poor guy. So 90s moments, what you got?
This episode was riddled with them. Jane's suspenders, them sexy ass suspenders.
Love them.
Love those. I've got Billy's laptop.
Oh, that's one I saw too.
The yellow pages.
Same scene though.
They're running through.
Those cups. Remember those like disposable cups that had the green and purple pattern that looked like splatter paint?
Nope.
Okay, well they're in this scene and they were like, they are very 90s to me.
Huh. All right. I'll give it to you. Squeezing your own orange juice. I feel like that's a 90s thing.
It's so good though. Freshly squeezed orange juice is like the bomb.
No, I'm not into it.
Drinking out of a water fountain. I feel like people just get, I mean, I did it the other day.
It's for pets.
But I feel like people get like bottled water now if they want to drink on the go.
Now people, because now all a water fountain is a place for your dog to get a... I'm not drinking after no dog.
Combat boots with dresses.
You know what's the worst with water fountains?
What?
At school or anywhere, if you're drinking at a water fountain and it's near a bathroom and you hear like the bathroom flush...
And then the pressure of the water
yeah,
is impacted.
The pressure of the water fountain changes a little bit. And then I'd always be like, ew.
I'm drinking pee water.
Yeah, how does it affect it?
Questions.
Used to trip me out.
Questions that we will never know the answers to. Another one, Matt handed Jeffrey a card with his personal phone number on it. He didn't write it down. He already had like a card prepared. So was that like a thing in the 90s? Instead of having a business card, it was like a personal card that had your deets on it or something?
I think people's cards now, business cards, have people's cell phone on them.
Okay, but...
Mine does.
Well, yeah, mine does too. But back in 94... He was like, here's my number. And he gave him like what looked like a business card.
Matt has been out and about.
Dan, I think you're delirious.
What?
I don't know what you're saying. An alarm clock?
I think oh, yeah, Amanda's just, alarm clock.
Yeah, I think people just use their phones now.
Yeah, it's all phones.
And then... The act of listening in on somebody's conversation by picking up a receiver in another room.
I used to try to do that shit on
I did that a few times with my mom.
My problem was they always heard me giggling. I'll be on the line like, like, Daniel, you motherfucker. Always giggling or breathing heavy.
Yeah.
I used to be on the other line like, just breathing on him.
Okay.
Like, hang on, I think my brother's on the line.
You got any more?
I've got mumps. I think mumps is a very 90s
thing. I think that's like an 1890s thing.
Who the fuck gets mumps? If you have mumps, we want to hear from you.
Okay, so what's your lesson from this episode?
My lesson is don't ever think that you have the upper hand. Like, Michael really, really screwed up because he thought he had one over on Sydney, and he didn't. He should have played ball with Sydney. Like, he always just sort of shoved her aside. And in this case, you know, she doubled down. She checked him. And she was like, I'm going to be the first one to come clean, and he'll be screwed. So just never underestimate the power of a tattletale.
Mine is kind of the other side of that. And it's from Jane's perspective. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I mean, this is a woman who has been backstabbed by these two awful people, Michael Mancini and Sydney Andrews, mm-hmm. multiple times before. And for whatever inexplicable reason, she continues to invite them back in her life. And the first time it happens, yes, you're a victim and it's terrible. And these people that you thought that you loved and trusted betrayed you. But if you continue to let them do that to you, you got some culpability, girlfriend. Mm-hmm. You need to cut them off.
Yep. Isn't that the saying that George Bush messed up? He's like, fool me once, shame on me.
I don't know, probably.
And then he just goes, if you get fooled, you can't get fooled again.
Seems like you know it pretty well.
If you're fooled, you can't get fooled again.
Okay, so now it's time to chat about
Bitch of the Week.
I'm a boss ass bitch, 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 bitch. I'm a boss ass bitch.
All right, gang. Last week it was a tough one. I nominated Amanda for bitch, and Jenny nominated Robert.
Let me guess, he won.
You're right.
I think if Amanda's up ever, like against anybody, Amanda's always going
to
win.
This was a close one, 56% to 44%.
Okay, well, thanks for having my back, guys.
Well, they didn't have it all the way because I won.
Okay, I'm the champ. I hear ya.
I'm the champ.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And with that, I'll go first. My bitch of the week, again, is Amanda.
Oh, Lord.
Ding, ding, ding. Here's why. One, she knows what she's doing on that boat. Don't think for one second that she doesn't know that this is Joe's new guy. And she wants to weasel her way in and make anyone she can jealous. That is a very bitchy thing to do. Plus, Melrose Place is a disaster. What a terrible, bitchy-ass landlord to be running around personally telling people that their rent is higher. And you have the balls to not even sweep the goddamn area around the pool. Clip a bush. Clip one tree. Clip one palm tree. It looks like shit in there. Looks like Jumanji out there. This is fucking... I would be irate. So bitchy.
Any other reasons?
And you raised the rent.
A standard incremental increase.
Raising the rent in general, very bitchy thing. Not into it. Not feeling it. Amanda, you're a bitch.
All right, touche. Well, my bitch of the week nomination is Sydney Andrews. Why? Well, Sydney, her whole motivation for everything is to get back into the good graces of Michael. And if you look at this entire storyline and what has gone down, I mean, ultimately, she is the worst sister of all time. Yes, she goes to Jane, she reconciles with her, and she does come clean about everything. But the motivation for doing so is just to get back at Michael. It's not because she wants to do the right thing. It's because she wants to prove to Michael that she has power over him. And that is horrible because she is just playing with her sister's emotions again. It's like the same story, different episode every time with her. It's like she does not have any kind of a conscience. She's a total bitch.
Can't believe it, Sid. So this week, on Tuesday, after this episode is released, and right when I remember, I will be posting the Bitch of the Week poll on Twitter and our super cool secret private closed group on Facebook.
That you can all get into.
That you can all get in. You just have to say you want to get in.
And then we'll let you.
But it's closed to begin with. So just want to let y'all know that.
Okay, so vote, guys. You tell us who's the bitch of the week. So rename. This episode was called... What the hell is it called?
Something stupid.
Something... Oh, like aroused suspicion.
I think that's the name of a porno.
I'm pretty sure it's the name of this episode. So, Daniel, what are you going to rename this episode?
I'm renaming this one Heartache and Fake Jake.
Got a nice little ring to it.
Thank you. A lot of heartache with Michael. He's what? On a pill popping binge.
What's up with Fake Jake?
Reed is Fake Jake.
Oh, I see.
Reed is new Jake. It's the same storyline.
Yeah.
Amanda, business opportunity with Jake, with the modeling.
You're totally right.
And Joe being fucking jealous as shit. It's Fake Jake.
Yeah, totally right.
He's Fake Jake.
I like it.
Thanks. What's yours?
I am calling this Overstayed Welcomes. With Celia and... Michael, these people are just taking their welcomes and they're overstaying them and they're about to get booted out.
I like it.
Thanks, man.
That's a really, really good one.
All right. So predictions. What do we think is going to happen to these guys?
Here's what's going down. One, Joe. I think Joe is going to shoot Reed with that shotgun. I think Michael is going to get back with Sydney because he's just going to be like, I got nothing else. He's going to be like, what do you want? All right, let's do it.
Move in here.
Yep. And I think Billy doesn't take the job in New York
because
he's a pussy.
Okay, I think Michael may need some medical attention because we left him where he's like totally incoherent, passing out.
Hey, Jane. You
know, this is the start of a really ferocious, like, pill addiction for him. I think that Reed is going to keep people as slaves in his boat.
It's a slave trade?
I think he's going to be hiding drugs or something. People, I don't know. But that little crawl space cavern that he's creating is going to house something really bad.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be coming down the pipe. I think that Matt isn't going to love this new relationship where he has to be on the DL with this dude. And I think that's going to cause a lot of stress and problems down the road. And there's something to the fact that Allison edited their story. I think Celia is going to go to like Nancy and be like, he cheated. He lives with his girlfriend, Allison, helped with the editing. And like, that's somehow going to come back and play a role in why Billy doesn't go to New York. And
that's
I think like
shout.
You said, Celia is going to go to New York in his place. And it's probably going to come from like, it wasn't his work. It was Allison's work.
Yeah. That's interesting.
So we'll see. We'll see how it all shakes out.
Cool.
So guys, we talked a little bit about our Facebook group and I have the coolest story that I have to tell you. So it turns out our little group is bringing people together. People are bonding over their love of Melrose Place. They're trading stories. They're trading stuff about, you know, the fun merch that they have. And it turns out that somebody in our group, Kevin, went to my elementary school.
Insane.
And we were like, we were friends. And Dan, I have a confession I have to make.
What?
I think I had a crush on Kevin when I was in fourth grade.
Kevin, you son of a bitch. You stay away from my wife.
Okay, like Kevin reached out to me. Well, he if you remember, last week he was our newest patron. And we were so appreciative, and we still are, of course. And he reached out to us, and he wrote us this awesome email. And I, of course, went immediately to go check out his photos and, like, Facebook stalk him. And I was like, oh, my God, this is Kevin from fourth grade.
This is your heartthrob.
It's my heartthrob. He's my heart. So, Kevin, I just can't. I know that we chatted a little bit on Facebook Messenger, but I just have to tell you personally how thrilled I am that we were able to reconnect in this way. And it's just.
And he reconnected with a college friend.
Yeah. He found a girl. Is it Vivian?
I think so.
Yeah. So, I mean, just kind of like, it's just so cool how totally small this world is, especially when you have a crazy interest in this show. And it's just a testament to the awesome people that we have that listen to the show and really want to connect with one another. So we love all of you and just so happy that you guys are engaged on Facebook.
You guys are awesome.
We love you.
So with that being said, we're not just on Facebook. We're on Twitter and Instagram too. And you can find us at Melrose Pod. Melrose P-O-D. We love getting Apple Podcast reviews. We really do. And we haven't gotten one in a very long time. And we're starting to
tell your friends. We're starting to feel your family.
Like, we're starting to feel like we suck, man. So,
oh, stop. We're not.
Write us a review.
If you haven't done so already, please do leave a review. It does help us quite a bit for people to find us. And,
keeps me going.
We just love doing what we do. And we love you.
We love you. We're on Patreon. Patreon.com/MelrosePod. We're trying to get this show running. Trying to grow. Trying to make merch. Trying to get stickers, t-shirts, all that type of stuff. And we want to keep making bonus episodes for you guys. So if you feel like contributing, you unlock, I think, like 4 or 5 new episodes. Yeah. And when I get off my ass, you get the regular episodes several days early. So there's that.
Okay, guys. We love smut.
And we love you.